You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, May 10th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District in New York City. To celebrate my cold and President Obama being the first president of the United States to acknowledge what should have been acknowledged a long time ago, that gay people should have the same rights as non-gay people. I am taking the day off. However, we still have brand new content for you members and even you non-members. We'll be back Friday with Cliff Schechter to talk about, obviously, this incredible week where we saw both the revocation of some rights for gay people in a state like North Carolina, but also the support of those rights at the highest levels of our government. But today on the program, Jerry Ensminger, a Marine Corps Master Sergeant, who is the subject of a documentary, Semper Fi, Always Faithful, about Jerry's decades-long mission to both find out why his 9-year-old daughter contracted and died of a rare type of leukemia, and what he's done since he found the answer to that question and trying to protect others. Just a heartbreaking story. And then members will hear an interview I did with the filmmakers of We're Not Broke, the movie. Directors and producers Karen Hayes and Victoria Bruce on their documentary, which basically they were recording the incredible tax evasion by corporations in this company and what people are doing about it. But first, let's hear that interview with Jerry Ensminger, and we'll be back live on Friday to talk about these amazing turn of events this week in terms of marriage equality and, of course, more. Have a great Thursday. On the phone with me is Marine Corps retired Master Sergeant Jerry Ensminger, who is the subject of a documentary that is out now, and screenings. You can find the list of screenings. We will put a link to the film Semper Fi, Always Faithful, on Majority FM. Jerry, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, Jerry, let's start. Please tell us your story. You were a Marine Master Sergeant, and you came back from Okinawa and to Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. Tell us your story.
Well, I came back from Okinawa with my family, new family, wife and child, and we subsequently were assigned housing aboard the base at Camp Lejeune.
And the year was?
That was in 1974.
Okay.
And I stayed there for approximately a year and a half, and I got orders to go to drill instructor school at Parris Island. And when you get orders to drill instructor school, you're not allowed to take your family with you because it's a very, very demanding and tough school. And normally they have a large attrition rate out of that school. So your family stays back at your command wherever you came from until you complete the school. So Janie was conceived while we lived in the housing at Camp Lejeune. The first trimester of her mother's pregnancy with her was while we were living there. And then Janie was subsequently born at Beaufort Naval Hospital, which is right outside of Parris Island, South Carolina. When Janie was six, she was diagnosed with acute lymphocytic leukemia. And, you know, after the shock of her diagnosis wore off and the hustle and bustle of getting her somewhere to a treatment facility to get her treatments, you know, I had spoken to many other parents who had children in the same situation, and without exception, every one of them had the same response that I did. When they had time to sit down and think about it, the first question that came into everybody's mind was why? And when Janie was under her undergoing her treatments throughout her 2.5-year illness, we were at two different university medical centers. One was Penn State University Medical Center at Hershey, Pennsylvania, and the other one was at Duke University Medical Center here in North Carolina. Every time I was at one of these university medical centers, when I had a chance, I would go over to the research department and go from different laboratories to different scientists, and I would ask them the question, why? Because I had looked at my family history, her mother's family history, and no other child had been diagnosed with leukemia or any other type of cancer. And none of these researchers could or would give me an answer as to what, you know, why this happened. That nagging question stayed with me through Janie's illness, through her death, and it wasn't until the summer of 1997, 3 years after I had retired from the Marine Corps, that I was walking out of the kitchen with a plate of spaghetti to watch the evening news, and the reporter on the TV screen said that the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, which is part of our CDC, had released their public health assessment for the contamination sites at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and that the contaminants that had been in the drinking water there in the past were suspected to have caused childhood cancer, and then they said primarily leukemia. Hmm. Well, I'll tell you, Sam, I dropped my plate of spaghetti right there on the living room floor.
And so this information we're talking about, they're looking at this report. Were they talking about contamination that had been continuing up to 97? Were they talking about just specifically the time that you were at Camp Lejeune? What was the temporal scope of this report?
Well, this report was erroneously citing the years of 1968 through 1985. And I say erroneous because we have discovered that the contamination began much earlier, And in some areas of the base, it continued through 1987. According to the Marine Corps and the Department of the Navy, which is one of the first things that they jump out and say whenever they make a statement today about this, is that they want to assure everyone that the water aboard Camp Lejeune is frequently tested and it meets all water quality standards as far as the Safe Drinking Water Act goes. Well, you know, when they make these statements, I almost have to chuckle. If it wasn't such a sad situation, I would laugh out loud, especially when they make that statement, because that's what they were saying back in the 1980s.
Hmm. And what was the water contaminated with?
The water, drinking water Camp Lejeune was contaminated with tetrachloroethylene, which is known as PCE, trichloroethylene, which is known as TCE, dichloroethylene, which is DCE, vinyl chloride, benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene.
And how did this water get contaminated? Where are these chemicals coming from?
Well, the one housing area for the base, which they created this housing area on this little narrow strip of property that was between the base boundary and the civilian community, and it was on the backside of a river. And this narrow strip of property, they put this housing area in. They placed the drinking water supply wells directly across the street and down gradient of all kinds of potential contamination sources, which were auto repair facilities, gasoline stations, septic tanks, dry cleaning establishments, and just so happened one of the dry cleaning establishments across the street was disposing of their dry cleaning chemicals in their septic system. Hmm. And I'm telling you, the highest contaminated well in that housing area, which was Tarawa Terrace, well number 26, I could stand at the site of that well and take a golf ball out of my pocket and throw it across the street and hit a dry cleaning facility. Hmm. I mean, that's how close. I mean, I could spit and hit the property line. I mean, that's how close they put the wells. But the rest of it was over on the main part of the base where most of the people got exposed at Camp Lejeune, was the negligence of the military. They were dumping this stuff into storm drains. They were actually scrubbing shop floors with these chemicals and squeegeeing the stuff right out onto the blacktop and then hosing it down. There were underground storage tanks that were leaking. The main fuel farm for the base, was leaking, and they knew it, and they did nothing. And then they tried to hide that, even from ATSDR. They tried to hide it.
And so what was the incidence around Camp Lejeune of leukemia? Were there multiple cases over the course of these years?
Well, they've discovered now in the in utero population, which they did a survey on, that leukemia, hematic cancers, which were include leukemia and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in the children that were born there, are between 2 to 3 times higher than what it would have been expected in a community that wasn't exposed.
So when you hear this report from on television, then what did you do?
I began making phone calls immediately. And, you know, having been a retired Marine, I spent 24 and a half years of my life in that gun club. I had all the faith and confidence that the United States Marine Corps would live up to its motto, which is Semper Fidelis, which is Latin for always faithful. And I had all the faith and confidence that these people would live up to our slogan, which is we take care of our own. But as time went on, Sam, the realization came over me that, I mean, and after I made more contacts with their representatives from the Department of the Navy and Marine Corps, you name it, the realization came over me that not only were these people not going to do what was right by their people, they were doing everything in their power to do what was wrong. They were providing people with incorrect data. They lied to me right up front and said, oh, these chemicals that were in the water, they're not that harmful, and they weren't that high of levels, that they were minute trace amounts in the drinking water. And when you look at their statements today, and what they were telling me back then, Camp Lejeune is going to be known as the worst drinking water contamination in the history of the United States.
When they made these assertions about the amounts of chemicals that were in the water at that time, when you 1997, 98, when you start to make these phone calls, were they citing studies? I mean, did you have access to these studies? I mean, they claimed that they were testing the water at that time. Did they provide access to it, or did they simply say, oh, trust us?
Yeah, no, basically it was all trust us. And then Tom Townsend and I kind of teamed up, and Tom wrote over 1,200 handwritten Freedom of Information Act requests. And he started getting a lot of information through those Freedom of Information Act requests, and then we started seeing some of the truth. And then when ATSDR finally realized that they were being lied to by the Department of the Navy and Marine Corps, they actually provided them with incorrect water system data. And that's when ATSDR said, okay, enough is enough. We're going to do a historical reconstruction of the water systems through these computerized water models.
And what is ATSDR?
That's the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, which is part of our CDC.
And they were getting basically cooked books on the tests that were taking place during that time?
I don't know about the tests, but they were provided incorrect water system data for the historical periods of time that they were looking at studying. The Marine Corps gave them water system data that showed all the major housing areas on the main part of the base as being on this clean water system for the entire period of their study, which initially was 68 through 85. And when in fact that supposedly clean water system had never been constructed until 1972. And then to top it all off, they led ATSDR to believe that the maximum amount of fuel that had been lost out of that main fuel farm had been somewhere between 20 and 50,000 gallons, 50,000 gallons at the maximum. Huh. That was over a 50-year period from 1941 to 1991 when they finally shut that fuel farm down. We discovered documents in 2009 that put the estimated losses at 800,000 gallons. Wow. And then ATSDR discovered the existence of a password-protected electronic portal where they had rat-holed all of the information pertaining to the fuel leaks at the base into this password-protected electronic portal. We had to go to Congress to force them to turn that over to ATSDR. And when ATSDR got into that, the estimates were put at 1.1 million gallons of, and now the important thing here, Sam, is that this was gasoline. and the importance of gasoline is multiple times higher than any other type of fuel in benzene, which is a known human carcinogen.
And so this is the Marine Corps basically had basically just a separate set of books that was sort of hidden behind computer firewalls.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they were separate. There were certain things that they were hiding, and they kept them hidden. Well, they thought they did, but
so Jerry, what did you do once you started making these calls? Once you started, once you teamed up with Tom Townsend, and you started to find this information. Then you took this flight to Washington.
Well, I didn't go to Washington right away. I stayed in touch with the local media because that's all we had that was interested in this at the time. And, you know, I'll give them credit. You know, the local media kept this alive. They did story after story, article after article on television and in print media. And then finally, in 2003, the Washington Post showed up down here, and I showed them around. I showed them the documents. I did interviews with them, and that was in September of 2003, and they finally ran their article on the 28th of January, 2004. And the article took the entire third page of the Washington Post, and it was titled Tainted Water in the Land of Semper Fi. And because of that article, Congressman John Dingell from Michigan, who was the ranking member of the Energy and Commerce Committee at that time because the Republicans had control of the House, he and his staff saw that article. They contacted me and asked me to come up and sit down and talk to Mr. Dingell and his staff, which I did. And little did I know, but that was a job interview because DOD was right at that time in the process of attempting to get more immunities from environmental regulations. And Mr. Dingell was forcing it into a hearing. And it was shortly after that meeting that I had with him and his staff that they asked me if I would come and testify at that hearing on the 22nd of April in 2004, which I did. And DOD's attempts to get immunities from environmental, these further immunities, was defeated. And Mr. Dingell and his staff took extensive steps to further this issue. They went to ATSDR and basically demanded that ATSDR create this expert panel. They created an expert panel. And one of the recommendations out of that expert panel meeting was that they create the Camp Lejeune Community Assistance Panel, which was created because of that initiative through Mr. Dingell. And then, you know, then the rest of the media started picking up on this issue. And then finally, Congress was taken back over by the Democrats in the 2006 election. And Art Stupak, who was on the Energy and Commerce Committee when I testified in 2004, stated that if he ever got control, if they ever took control of Congress back over again and he became a chairman, that he was going to hold a hearing on this. Well, he held a hearing in 2007 about Camp Lejeune. And then because of the media pressure and congressional pressure, and I made allies with Senator Burr and Senator Hagan, are both on board with this thing from North Carolina. Glad to see that. And Congressman Brad Miller from North Carolina.
What came out of those hearings? A promise by the Marine Corps to notify people? I mean, because at this point, there was no direct notification for people who had been exposed to this drinking water, who had been drinking it, that it was full of toxins.
Well, the notification, I had to get that through an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act back in 2007 through Senator Elizabeth Dole, and she was still a senator. But, you know, the way that was done, her initiative was appreciated, but it allowed so many cracks for these people to, I call it escape hatches. You know, I'm telling you, I've made this statement before to people, and, you know, a lot of people raise their eyebrows when I make this statement, but, I tell people that if you think that the mafia is the most corrupt organization in our country, well, I'm here to tell you, you're wrong. The United States Department of Defense is the most corrupt entity in our nation, probably on the face of the earth.
And they have done everything they can to essentially not make people aware of this. I mean, why would that be? I mean, are they afraid of being subject to some type of lawsuits? I mean, what do you sense is?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and while the Department of Defense has to clean up, or at least attempt to clean up the messes that they've made, they have basically put out an unwritten policy that they will not accept any kind of liability, personal liability, for anybody that they've harmed.
And the story of Camp Lejeune and your story is just one of many in terms of pollution that has caused this type of harm to people, isn't it?
Oh, it's just I made the statement in the film. This is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, this is the very tip. I mean, not just for military, but these industrial sites all over the United States. I mean, and then these companies, you know, they know that they've polluted, and all of a sudden, all the doors are locked, the windows are barred up, and next thing people find out is they've moved. They move somewhere else. Well, guess who's relegated to living in those areas? The poor people. I mean, the people who cannot afford to move their families away from this stuff are stuck living there.
And so where does this stand now? I mean, I know there is a piece of legislation with your name on it. What is that legislation call for?
That piece of legislation does not have my name on it. It has my daughter's name on it.
I'm sorry, Janie.
That's H.R. 1742, which was introduced by Representative Brad Miller in 2010 because the elections in 2010 gave control of the House of Representatives back to the Republicans. And the fact that this bill called for action through the Veterans Administration, that bill had to be turned over to the VA committee on the House side. Well, the new chairman is a man by the name of Jeff Miller from Florida's 1st Congressional District, which is at Pensacola, Florida, out on the end of the panhandle. And he's had that bill for a year and has done nothing with it. Absolutely nothing. And then on the 17th of February, on a Friday afternoon at 3:30 in the afternoon, he put out a press release and a letter that he wrote to Secretary Shinseki of the Veterans Administration, asking General Shinseki, out of the kindness of his heart, to please consider giving Camp Lejeune veterans and their families some of these benefits, because he cited a $5 billion overage in the VA's budget. And $3 billion of that was in their supposedly in their FY 2012 budget, and $2 billion in the FY 2013 budget. Well, my automatic response to that was, if there is an overage, and you know it, why are you asking for the good graces of the Secretary of the Veterans Affairs Committee? Why in the hell don't you pass this bill yourself and make him do it?
What does that bill call for?
It calls for health care for the veterans and their family members.
And what is the status of that bill now? Is it unchanged since February?
It's still languishing on Chairman Miller's desk, Jeff Miller's desk. And he just last evening put a poll question on the Facebook page for the House Veterans Affairs Committee asking asking everybody to answer yes or no. Should the administration provide health care for the Camp Lejeune victims? And
Let me understand this. So Jeff Miller has basically said, I'm going to ignore the legislation where we could mandate this, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw this in and use this as a political hot potato to make it look like the administration is denying these benefits for people who have been subjected to these toxins.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Exactly it. And I mean, I was so infuriated when I saw this, and I went on his, I went on this Facebook, and we sent out a mass email to all of our members this morning saying, because all these people were jumping on there and voting yes. And I told all of our members, I said, hey, look, nothing could be further from the truth. This guy's making a fool out of everybody here.
Yeah, I think it's hard for the average American to understand these issues and these dynamics. Let me ask you this. How has the response been from your fellow Marines, people who had served at Camp Lejeune? And has that changed over the years? In other words, were you greeted with suspicion for essentially trying to hold the Marine Corps accountable, and has that changed at all?
I've had friends of mine that I have been friends with for over 30 years that I no longer correspond or even have touch with anymore, have contact with. And, you know, that's fine. You know, having been a career Marine, having been a drill instructor, having instilled our core values into over 2,000 new Marines that I personally trained, I'll tell you, Sam, I got to the point at one point in time in this fight, which has now been almost 15 years, I had to stop and look at myself in the mirror one time and say, my God, did you throw away 25 years of your life living a lie? And I had to answer myself, and my answer to myself was, no, I'm not living a lie. They are. They're the ones that are lying. And people ask me to this day, hey, Jerry, how's this still going with the water? And my standard response to them is that they're still lying and they're still denying. And we have recently discovered that the Department of the Navy had very explicit and very strict drinking water standards and methods of testing all the way back to August of 1963.
Which apparently they did not uphold. Jerry Ensminger, thank you so much for sharing this story with us. The movie is Semper Fi, Always Faithful. It can be found at SemperFiAlwaysFaithful.com. You can find a screening that's taking place near you. It's available on Netflix and iTunes and on Amazon and Sundance Now. And you can also sign up at SemperFiAlwaysFaithful.com for email updates, which will provide you with screening information and community action campaigns. Jerry, thank you so much for sharing our story, and I really appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you, Sam, and Semper Fi.
An apple pie.